Hello and welcome to the Deutsche Bank Analyst Webcast 2024 Results Conference Call. Please note this call is being recorded, and for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions at the end of the call. This can be done by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad to register your question. If you require assistance at any point, please press star 0 and you will be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to your host, Mr. Roland Buchaut, CEO, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you very much, operator, and welcome to the listener. Thank you for finding the time to share some time with us and go through the presentation that we have prepared for the 2024 results. With me is André Haag, our CFO, and together with him, we will try to take you through the numbers and give you a flavor of what has been going on in 2024. We have a presentation. I'm starting on page 2. I'll fly over relatively high, not diving into numbers too much because I'll leave that to André. The key points for 2024 is that we had a strong commercial year. We're very happy with that. We continue to produce a lot of mortgages above our market share of the year before. In other words, we grew market share. We managed to increase our portfolio significantly, I would say, with almost 3 billion, the bulk of which was financed through the attraction of additional savings money. So that is a very balanced and strong performance from a commercial point of view. On the back of the attractive products, but more importantly, also a very high NPS score that we managed to increase from minus 1 to plus 4, which in this market is not a given, highly competitive in the Netherlands. And given the fact that, particularly on the mortgage production, we managed to maintain a good margin, all in all, the top line had some erosion, as we had predicted before, because of the change in the interest rate curve to the tune of 7%. But the bulk of it, therefore, stayed stable. Like I said, on the back of a strong commercial performance. The cost side of it showed also a strong performance in the sense that the numbers stayed very stable. André, again, will take you through some details, but we had predicted there too that we would have a strong upward push, partly because of costs that associated with some initiatives that we had to execute, but also just in general because of the inflationary pressure that we have, and certainly also the agreement on new collective labor agreements that are being concluded through the industry that push the prices up. The two of these effects are predicted to have a squeeze on the P&L. And we would have seen that were it not that we had a cost under control there. Supported with a couple of incidental items that we'll go through in a moment, resulted in a bottom line that was virtually the same as the year before. 427 for 24 versus 431 for 23, which is a very, very strong performance before exceptional items. It gave us the opportunity to create a number of provisions that we need in order to be able to go into a transformation. And I'll get back to that in a moment. But and it also afforded us the opportunity to get rid of a number of things that fall in the category legacy. And we want to make sure that we are fully positioned in order to shape the future and to make the investments necessary to become fully compliant and to be an attractive future-oriented bank, depending on or say on the back of the transformation program, as we will go in a moment. I'll jump to the permission to page 6 very quickly. You see there on the top left corner the net promoter score development, like I said, from minus 1 to plus 4, a strong development. 7 was the originally defined target. I think we're well on track to get there. Of course, we will find some pressure because of the transformation, rebranding, and the integration of the distribution channels, but we'll strive forward. The number of active multi-customers, you'll see, is also well on course to get to the 25 target. I think it's a strong performance in 2024. Climate neutral balance sheet is a very high number this year. It is partly helped by the fact that our customers, because of a warmer year, have just simply used fewer fuels in order to heat the houses. But it's also supported by further improvement of the, green profile of the houses, further insulations and installations that help to reduce the CO2 emissions that our mortgage customers are having. So that really works. Genuine attention for customers, for employees. Stayed at a high level. We are very happy with that because we announced a number of course, very disruptive initiatives that we're taking that has a potential pressure downwards on it. So this level bodes well for the changes that we still have. I'll skip the return on equity because Andre will go into that as well as the other prudential ratios at the bottom. They are guiding us, of course, towards the future very clearly. On the slide number 7, the mortgage production, like I mentioned there, from 5.1 to 7.1 in new production, which is a significant increase, I would say. And like I said, it also reflects an increase in market share, which is in this highly competitive environment quite significant, from 5.7 to 6.3%. So we're very happy with that. Also in the SME loans, we continue to grow. Of course, it's a difficult segment also to make a dent. We are having a very conservative portfolio there. It's mortgage-based lending that we do there. So it's very conservative, and nevertheless, we managed to grow it quite significantly and according to our plans. Like I said, on the page 8, on the left-hand side, we discussed already on the right-hand side, like I said, the majority of the increase of the mortgage portfolio was funded with the increase in retail savings. We've been selective in the past about which customers we want. We want to prefer to avoid the monoproduct customers that do the price hopping, and therefore we see less growth in the liabilities than you would see. But future-oriented, we will try and make sure that we have more than single-product, monoproduct customers and continue to attract further funding in order to fund the growth that we aim for in our mortgage book. I'm going to jump over the last slide of the numbers, and Andre is going to dive into it more in detail, and I go straight to 10. With going back to the two administrative fines that we have received, I won't elaborate too much because we've extensively discussed them when we came out with the press releases at the time that we received them. Nevertheless, one was the role of the gatekeeper, the WWFT, the interest, the laws, making sure that we avoid money laundering and anti-terrorist financing. So we've clearly made mistakes there. Things were not perfectly organized, and we've the regulator has identified flaws in the process. We're not debating that. We're acknowledging the flaws that we've had there, and they have also existed for an extended period of time, which made the regulator decide to impose a fine upon us. We're not contesting the fine. It's there. Instead, we just put all our effort in remediating the situation. You can see here a few steps that have been taken. We've appointed Gwendolyn van Thunen in the executive committee to spearhead the remediation program. Already in August, we had an assessment and a seal of approval of the CERA, the so-called Systemic Integrity Risk Assessment, with the regulator, which allows us to prepare the remediation program, which was also extensively discussed and in the meantime approved by the regulator. So now what we have to do is to put the pedal to the metal to make sure that we deliver on the expectations that we've outlined in the remediation program. Both the anti-financial crime organization as well as the risk management organization are outside of the scope of the transformation program. In order to allow them to just do their remediation work and not fall in the trap that we've fallen in before, that doesn't mean that these organizations do not change. They change dramatically. Both Saskia Hoskins, our CRO, as well as Gwendolyn van Thunen, our CFCO, are dramatically changing the organization, streamlining it, attracting highly qualified people to operate in a flatter organization that will be more able to take quick decisions and to work on dedicated remediation programs, whereby I have to say that the WFT program from the financial, from the risk management organization is not just a risk management issue. It entails also the first line very clearly, but under the supervision of the CRO, we had a broad program outlined that will allow us to remediate all the shortcomings that we have seen there. A few words before we switch to Andre Haag about the transformation. If you recall, we have three pillars of it. One was the rationalization of the brand portfolio and moving to one single brand, away from four active brands with five brands in total, because we had a lot of employees working for a brand called the Volksbank, which is a label we're not allowed to use for commercial purposes in the market. We'll move the entire organization and unite the entire organization behind one single brand, which will be ASN Bank. In addition to that, we'll shorten the decision lines in the organization. I like to call it right-size the organization on the basis of our relatively simple business model that is based on savings, payments, and mortgages, which also will allow our staff to have clear mandates, source decision lines, and to act much more swiftly on both commercial as well as regulatory developments. Unfortunately, this goes along hand-in-hand with a significant number of redundancies that will be executed until the 1st of July. Unfortunately, it's unavoidable. Obviously, we do not derive any pleasure whatsoever in identifying people that will become redundant, but it's unavoidable, and we will have a much more agile organization that will be able to be more effectively and swiftly react to developments that we need to reply to. And lastly is the integration of the distribution model. Right now, we have essentially four pillars that we build on. We have two different franchise models. We have an intermediary model, and we have so-called shops that are staffed with the people on our payroll. We'll bring it back to two models, which is an integrated franchise model and the intermediary model. This is in full scope and in full force. We do it step by step. We don't want to take any risks in the cooperation with our partners, so we do it in very close alignment of the two associations representing the franchisees. And in the second instance, we'll start further working it out with the intermediaries, but we're clearly striving here for a win-win situation, so we do it in very, very close cooperation with them. And depending on the progress that we make in the discussions, it will determine the speed in which we will conclude these integrations. With that, I would like to hand it over to André for the financial part. André.
Thank you very much, Roland. Good morning, everyone, and also warm welcome from my side. Let me continue with our financial results for the year 2024. Starting in our presentation on page 16, this shows an extract of our profit and loss account. But before I'm going to dive deeper into it, let's have a short look at the economic environment in which we embedded as bank. Looking back at 2024, the global economy remained resilient, despite varying level of economic activities across countries and sectors. Inflation continued to be moderate, and headline inflation moved closer to central bank targets in most economies. Labor market tightness eased, although unemployment rates generally remained at or near historical lows. This picture also reconciles to the Dutch economy. In addition to that, the ECB changed its monetary policy by lowering three key interest rates in 2024, and more rate cuts are expected to take place in 2025. Against this background, the Volksbank had a strong commercial year and also with a sound underlying financial performance. Looking back at the table on the left side of page 16, for the year 2024, the bank reports a net result of 144 million, which is around 287 million below previous year. If you look at the underlying drivers, we report a total income of 1.3 billion, which is around 7% below previous year. And this was partially offset by increased total operating expenses up to 1.1 billion, but a significant increase was mainly related to incidental items. Furthermore, our net result was positively impacted by a release of impairment charges of 51 million in 2024, compared to a buildup of charges of 15 million for previous year. This overall formed the net result of 144 million. If we now look at the incidental items, so these are major items that we pull together. You see actually separate lines in the table. It sums up to 283 million in total. That is the incidental amount after tax. It's mainly in four categories. One category is related to the internal transformation, improving our business model in the future. Another bucket is related to data remediation of the anti-financial crime case and to improve that further. The third one is a closeout of a legacy case, and the fourth bucket is about the two administrative fines that we recently received from DNB. If we now deduct these incidental items from our net results, then it leads us to the adjusted net result, which is 427 million for the whole year 2024. If you compare this with previous year, it's nearly at the same level, it's 4 million below, but also indicates, again, a strong financial year. However, the incidental items had a major impact on the bank's profitability. And the profitability is shown in the RE table on the right side, and you see the 3 years horizon. Coming from 2022, the RE peaked up to 11.4%, supported by strong growth of our loan portfolio, but also by the interest rate changes at this time that the ECB set in the markets. And then, of course, new expectations are now rising because rate cuts started again, and there will be more rate cuts also in 2025, which will impact the bank's interest rate position. However, if you look at 2024 and you look at our net result, including incidentals, it leads to an ROE of 3.2%. If we exclude the incidental items, it would have resulted in 10.5% for the whole year. Now, I would suggest that we are diving a bit deeper into our results by looking at the underlying components and drivers in the following pages. So I'm now turning actually to page 17. This page shows the development of our total income. For the whole year 2024, we reported total income of 1.3 billion, which is around 106 million below previous year. If you look at the underlying drivers, it is predominantly driven by our net interest income, which sums up to 1.1 billion for 2024, as compared to the previous year, a reduction of 176 million. If we dive deeper into this, in the reasoning why declined year over year, it is mainly related to lower margins on savings deposits as a result of higher customer rates. There's also a small part related further, where we have a shift between NII towards the result of other results on financial instruments, which is another line in this table as well, because our hedging instruments have to be presented under IFRS in this line. Our total income was further positively impacted by net fee and commission income, which increased by 20% to over 77 million, mainly because of additional banking and package fees that we collected last year. And our investment income with minus 14 for 2024 was less negative compared to previous year, but we were there always transparent. It reflects our fixed income bond portfolio, which we mainly use for asset liability management transactions there. The bank's net interest margin is displayed in the bar chart in the middle. You see also the 3 years horizon. It peaked in 2023, actually with 180 bips. And you see now year-over-year actually a decline of 23 basis points towards the 157. Again, if you look there at the underlying reason and dividing that interest margin into a contribution from the asset and the liability side, we saw on the asset sides there over the last years, in particular in last year, slow recovery of our net interest margin on asset products, especially for our mortgage production with new coupons there. But this was overcompensated last year by the drop of the liability margin, mainly related towards lower contribution by our retail deposits year over year. Having said this, I'm now moving to the next page, and we are now on page 18. This page shows the development of the bank's expenses. For the year 2024, the bank reports total operating expenses of 1.1 billion. Which is a strong increase by 332 million compared to the previous year. If you look there at the underlying drivers, it is mainly related towards the incidental items, and you see it also in the table on the upper left side. We have it outlined with a separate line there. It sums up to 375 million. That is the amount of incidentals before tax. You have seen it earlier on the page, and the same amount after tax there, just that you can reconcile. If you split the 375 million, 129 million of that is related towards the transformation program and the improvements, the envisaged one for the future. Another 196 million is related to data remediation within the anti-financial crime file. 30 million is further related to closure of a legacy case from the past. And in the fourth bucket, we have 20 million related towards the recently received fines from BNB. If we now cover these incidental items from our total operating expense base, it leads us to the adjusted operating expenses. And the table indicates here for the year 2024, we report 765 million. If you compare this with previous year, then you report reduction of cost by 43 million. So the picture is flipping year over year. If you dive there into the reasoning why this is year over year improving, then it is predominantly impacted by 31 million lower regulatory cost, mainly because of the regulator concluded at the end of 2023 that the contribution of banks to the single resolution funds had closed because the fund is filled up. That's why it was not recurring in 2024 and saved us actually these regulatory spends. Furthermore, we record 14 million lower marketing spends in 2024, but we also had further 16 million one-off gain from a VAT file that was reopened there, which is a not recurring one. This was partially offset by additional AFC cost of 23 million and 27 million higher staff costs because of wage inflation that we face. If you now take these, the adjusted operating expense base and deduct further regulatory levies and the non-credit related provisions, then it leads you actually to the clean cost base, just for comparison purposes. For 2024, we report here 749, which is actually net flat compared to previous year. The bank's total FTEs declined by 50 year over year to over 4,357. But we all, over the earlier press release that we have a stronger ambition with the transformation to at first change our footprint, our commercial network, streamline our operation, make us more effective and efficient, which will also support later an improvement of our FTE base. The bank's cost income ratio is shown in the bar chart in the middle. You see that actually the bars with the 3 years horizon and the blue one is representing 2024 and you see a peak up there, which is here mainly related because of the incidental cost items. So we report cost income ratio of 87.2%. If we take out for a moment the incidentals, then it would have resulted in 58.5%. That's to stay in this range also in the future, which is our target range there. We have to focus really on the success of our transformation program by shaping the company to compensate other areas where we face gradual cost increases, like for wage inflation because of new CIO agreements or IT inflation cost as well. Now I'm turning to the next page and then moving to page 19. Page 19 shows the development of our impairment charges. Looking at first at the upper table on the left side, for the year 2024, we report a reversal of impairments by 51 million, which is mainly coming from residential mortgages. And you see the indicators in the table, it's a release of 48 million. And that is mainly related towards the stages one and two of the expected credit loan loss model. And if you look there behind, yeah, ECL stage one and two are predominantly impacted by macroeconomic parameters and outlooks there. And in 2024, we have seen, again, strong year of house price increases in the Netherlands. It was more than 8% in 2024, which triggered here actually a pressure to release. And we also have seen that the economic outlook from 2023 to 2024 was much more positive, which also resulted in this release. If you go 1 year back and compare it with 2023, then we're the opposite, actually. We reported the buildup of the impairment provision with 15 million charge, also coming out of mainly out of mortgages with 9 million. And then there was a bit of a different picture. That was from 2022 to 2023 going, actually, where more recession fear was actually in the market. Outlooks were a bit more negative, but it was later than not confirmed over 2024. That's why a different picture. Overall, if you look at the bottom line, we report low risk cost. If you go through the whole credit cycle, then we have an average 2 to 3 basis point risk cost to record. That is low compared to competitors and underpins the high credit quality in our loan portfolio. If you look at the bar chart in the middle, it shows the development of our average loan-to-value development for the whole portfolio. This improved further towards the end of the year. It was 50% average LTV, coming from 54 for previous year there. This improvement year over year is mainly coming from the Huspreis increases in the Netherlands there. So a de-risking strategy has not changed towards customers. Now I'm moving on to the next page, and now I'm on page 20. Page 20 shows the development of our prudential ratios. And looking at first, that's the capital ratios on the left side. So for 2024, we report a CET1 ratio of 20.2%, which is virtually stable compared with previous year. If you look at the underlying cross base, then we have recorded an increase of CET1 capital by 124 million year over year. And this was fully offset by additional RWAs of around 600 million. But overall capital ratios are robust and resilient and well above internal planning targets and the regulatory minimum thresholds. Our risk-weighted assets are shown here over here in the bar chart in the middle. We record here an increase of RWAs by 600 million to 17.1 billion per end of 2024. And this increase is mainly related to an organic growth of our lending portfolio and additional RWAs for financial institutions where we employ excess liquidity in the interbank market, considering a better risk-return trade-off. Leverage ratio was stable with 5.1 year-over-year, no significant change. For dividend, we considered actually the recently received fines from DNB, and in line with prudent management, we will suggest towards the AGM to retain the remainder of the profits and take the time to analyze the current situation and remediation solutions and underlying costs attached to this. Well, this brings me actually to the end of my part. Thanks a lot for your attention. I hand back to you, Olaf.
Thank you, André. I think we open the floor for questions. Operator?
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question or make a contribution on today's call, please press star 1 now on your telephone keypad, and to redraw your question, press star 2. Also ensure your line remains unmuted locally. You will be advised when to ask your question. The first question comes from the line of Cor Kluis, calling from ABN AMRO Bank. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for the presentation. Got a couple of questions. First of all, about the anti-financial crime charge and the two penalties. What consequence could it have for RWAs, especially for operational RWAs going forward? Could you explain how that works in the modeling, and is that also one of the reasons not to pay a dividend? A second question is on the NII and net interest income guidance for 2025. Logical that is, of course, a little bit lower than 2024. But then what kind of areas do we have to think? We've seen some other competitors giving some guidance for 2025 versus 24. Are we really talking about minus 5% or very low single digit, or are we talking about a larger potential decline year on year? And also related to that, could you give an idea how ECB sensitive you are on the asset side for the replicating portfolio? And some other banks say it's around 45-50% of the replicating portfolio is below 1 year. Maybe can give some sensitivity on that. My third question is about the reorganization. I think branch is 45% down and FTEs minus 17 from the program. Of course, there's still an X amount of work that has to be done for servicing clients. Could you elaborate how you are automating processes, especially with GenAI? You can, of course, increase the productivity a lot to handle questions and do changes, etc., what clients request. Could you explain on investments and initiatives that you are taking to improve the service with a lower cost base from that point of view? That were my questions.
Okay, let me start. Thanks a lot, Cole, for the question. I will cover the first two, and Roland will take over the third one. Coming back to your first question related to AFC, That topic was already in previous years considered for the non-compliance here and the operational risk attached. That's why you don't see further risk actually in other VAs considered in our model there. On the economic capital side, it's also considered. If you look at remediation, then of course we are now in this process of that we have Azira and the Hairstyle plan in place that was done in good collaboration with DNB's expectation and allows us now for focusing on the execution actually to come over these deficiencies that were early identified and become BVFD compliant here. But no other impact on other VAs expected. If I go to your second question, the NII, then we discussed earlier that we had the 23 basis points drop in 2023 to 2024. And we also expect that there will be further rate cuts by the ECB carried out in 2025. So it now depends on what you see as your new terminal rate there. We currently calculate, and then that is known in the market, with a terminal rate of 200 basis points per end of 2025. And there's uncertainty around how quick the ECB can take such rate cuts and whether they will it at the end, considering other circumstances. But if you consider actually 200 basis points as a fair terminal rate, then we expect further pressure on our net interest margin. And if you compare the sensitivity that we have seen now year by year with the rate cuts in 2024, then it will be quite similar for us also in 2025 in terms of further basis points reductions. If you look at the margin on the asset versus liability side, then we still see further improvements there of our asset margin because of if you go 8-9 years ago, then we were in a completely different environment with all banks, historically extremely low rates there. And from this environment coming to today and the new terminal rate, that is really a different one and still is improving. But the pressure lies more on the liability side for us with the compressed margins on retail deposits on demand, actually. I hope this answers your question, and I hand back to Roland for question three.
Yeah, thank you, André. The transformation, the success of the transformation is not dependent on the acceleration on the application of new technology. So when we talk about artificial intelligence or even just plain vanilla digitization, if there's such a thing, these are factors that are not driving the outcomes or the success of the transformation. As a matter of fact, we even have a law that we apply during the transformation, which is that we migrate before we upgrade. And let me elaborate a little bit on that, how that works. You know, right now we're having essentially a duplication or a quadruplication or whatever the word is in English of doing things four times with the four brands that are out in the market. So we have four-time product development, positioning, marketing budgets, call centers, et cetera, et cetera. So by consolidating those, we can already create a significant traction forward, you know, so much more power in the market, both with the brands as well as with the distribution channels. Now, the distribution channel optimization obviously aims at reducing significantly, but remain with the ones that are the strongest in production and the strongest in growth ambition. And so that is also a careful process that takes place, more in negotiations with the associations and the individual franchisees to define and identify the optimal spots for a physical location in the country, which will remain one of our most significant and easily recognizable distinguishing factors, but it's not IT driven. So the IT component that we are depending on in the transformation and the success is particularly the integration of the customer data, and to be able to supply the customer interaction with a complete picture of the customer as such. But it's not dependent on, let's say, advanced technologies in the processes. That is not to say that we don't occupy ourselves with it. You know, we opportunistically look at the opportunities to apply artificial intelligence, but it's more for relatively mundane things at minuting meetings, applying at the anti-financial crime analysis of large data, transaction data, looking at the audit function, things like that. We will, of course, not close our eyes for the opportunities that artificial intelligence are offering us, but the transformation is not depending on it. Does that answer your question, Cora?
Yeah, absolutely. Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Shahnawaz Bhinji calling from ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, operator. And hi, a couple of questions from my side. First one is more of a bond-specific question. So obviously, you guys still have that nasty negative outlook by S&P, which was driven obviously on the back of the legacy issues. Given the actions taken so far and obviously also the limited impact from the fine, do you think that there's enough proof being shown to the rating agencies that that might be withdrawn soon? And my next question is on the privatization. So you guys are clearly a proponent of a privatization. The outcome is still a bit unsure, also given what the Dutch parliament thinks about the privatization at the moment. So where do you see the next steps in this process? Is it in a bit of a limbo, or are there any further developments there? And then my final question is on the RWA density, because you clearly showed that the RWA density on the mortgages went down, but I did see a bit of a bump in, let's say, the stage two loans on the mortgages side. So I do read that these are related to specific non-amortizing loans, but yeah, if you could provide some more color on that and how that interacts, that would be great. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Andre is signaling that he is full of enthusiasm for the first and last question. So, Andre, why don't you start with the first one?
Yes, of course. For the first one, so just to get it right, with rating agencies there, that was always done. All information were exchanged in full transparency towards all the three agencies that make reports on us there. So I'm not aware of any fact that they have not considered so far in their reports and in their updates. That's why I also don't expect any further announcements from a rating agency perspective on this. If you have other factors that you intended to discuss with this question, then let's go deeper into it. But I'm not aware of any fact that was not considered so far for the first question. For the third one, for the RWAs, you referred to the restaging of 4 billion from stage 1 to 2 in the ECL model there. That is purely related towards a refined procedure for interest-only customers and there, and especially the high-risk segment and there. That is for the bigger banks in the Netherlands, a special procedure because of interaction with the prudential regulator and there. And we have in the past already for this segment calculated the P&L charges and other RWA densities and others correctly. But for the staging of the exposure, we needed to refine that based on data that becomes available there over time and in line with expectations of the regulators there. That's why you see this 4 billion shift in there. But besides that, there's no change. That's why the rest is not impacted by that. I hope this answers your question.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. Maybe if you could just confirm that, because you did mention, you know, on the RWA density decline, that it was also driven by the fact that, you know, the credit quality of the average Dutch consumer is obviously improving. I suppose that, you know, when you look at these specific loans which you've now taken to stage two, the underlying credit quality is in line with the general portfolio then.
Yes, there is. If you look at the whole portfolio, not only interest only, so this is a much broader one. And for them, we see an improvement. You saw that the house price index increased with pressures on the LTVs. We see the repayment profile of our customers. We see the external circumstances around it. We see there an improvement with our profile in the market there. There's also densities reflecting this. And for the interest only one, that was more technical data correction there without seeing a real deterioration of these customers in our book there. But it is related to the fair presentation on the IFRS.
Okay, gotcha. Thanks.
Yeah, then let me get back to the question you had on privatization. Indeed, it's true that the NLFI had prepared a letter to the Dutch Parliament, which was later accompanied by the opinion of the new Minister of Finance. In the meantime, not new anymore, but given the timing of the letter, he came later and he submitted it with the appreciation, basically backing up the letter of the NLFI representing the shareholder for the Volksbank. And the NFI drew the conclusion that for the company to be privatized, the two most viable options would be an IPO in 5 to 7 years or a strategic investor in 2 to 3 years. Now, it was a bit surprising how the discussion in the parliament developed. We're fully aligned with the NFI, by the way. We are exchanging views. In this case, it just so happens that we share the view with the NLFI. It could have been different, but we don't. We also agree with the position that the minister has taken in this. So, yes, it is true that we were a bit surprised with the turn that it took in the parliament. It has, however, absolutely no influence whatsoever on the steps that we are taking right now, which are completely independent of the future ownership of the company. What we're doing now is, one, becoming a fully compliant bank with all regulation, not only now, but also being able to absorb in regulation that is still coming down the pipe. That's one. And two, that we have a business model that allows this bank to be a successful bank going forward, irrespective of its ownership. Not that there's anybody knocking on the door right now, but if in that process, you know, we become so attractive that people would be knocking on our door or the door of the NLFI, that creates optionality, and that's okay. That's what we want, but it doesn't influence anything that we're doing right now. So the whole transformation is independent of the privatization effort. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, yes, it does. And maybe when you said there's no one knocking on the door right now, is that perhaps driven by the fact that Parliament has become a bit more skeptical, or is it just, you know, you guys want to focus on reshaping the bank first and then, you know, maybe going out as a potential target or an IPO suggestion later on?
Yeah, well, it's all of these things. But yeah, to be honest, it doesn't make you a very effective target if you have headlines about penalties that you're getting because of violations of WWFT or WFT. So that has happened. We've dealt with it. Now we go into remediation. It'll make it more attractive. And at some point, they will come and knock on somebody's door. It's not something that we spend any time on, right? We focus our efforts on the transformation and remediation programs. We do stakeholder management with the NLFI, the Ministry of Finance, and the Minister of Finance. And that's where the buck stops as far as we're concerned right now.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you very much. And yeah, congratulations with the good results.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We currently have no question coming through. So as a final reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one now on your telephone keypad. The star one now to ask a question, ladies and gentlemen. Well, there are no further questions, so I will hand you back to you, Roland, to conclude today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like to thank everybody for their participation and their questions, obviously. Thank you for your time. We're well on our way. We're happy with the year that was concluded. We're excited of the year that's ahead of us and giving this bank a prosperous future on a new footing. And we'll make quickly headway with it. We're doing our utmost to keep the speed up in the transformation. And as we have things to report, as always, we'll come out and report as soon as we have anything to say, good or bad. So I thank you for your attention and talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining today's call. You might now disconnect.